Hello, I'm Julie Lindsay, an international school Dhaka, Bangladesh. In collaboration with Vicky Davis at Westwood Schools in Camilla, Georgia, we created the Flat Classroom Project. Over the next 50 minutes, you will hear a podcast made from the discussion with the Flat Classroom Project 2006 judges. We asked them what they thought about the project, their reflections on their actual judging process, and how they think the project could be utilised in the future to foster best practice learning in the classroom.
Darren and Terry, you two have been judges for the Flat Classroom Project, and really with this project we included judges because we believe that there's a lot of potential, I know as do each of you, that of collaborative type projects where teachers actually kind of match up with each other with common interests via blogs. And Darren, if you could kind of just introduce yourself and talk a little bit about, you know, what you've been doing, because you're really a front runner in using Web 2 technologies in your class, in your math classroom. And then just briefly your impressions about this type of project, and then we'll go to Terry.
Sure. Well, I'm the department head of mathematics at Daniel McIntyre Collegiate Institute, which is a 9-12 high school in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And I've been blogging with my classes going on 3 years now. And the blog is really just kind of the central hub. It's a repository for all the different things that we do, because my classes also have wikis, and we try to do at least one podcast a semester, and we use a suite of other tools that are brought together on the blog. So that's what I do, and seem to be having some success with it. The latest thing I got into was using Flickr with my classes, which led to some really interesting work that they put together. As far as the project goes, I thought the entire idea of connecting two schools that are literally half a world away was a really wonderful idea. Very exciting that the students in those classrooms should be able to connect, and not just they should be connect both on a personal level, and that they should learn together. And the topic that you chose to do was one that's pertinent now in the changing global economy and in education. And I thought it was interesting that you had the students describe the various flatteners that Friedman looks at in his book, both from a perspective of how it affects business and education. What I saw was a lot of really exciting work being done. I saw a lot of, in any class, I think you're going to have kids that really are motivated and do really well, and some that aren't. I saw some of all of that. I saw some kids that were really juiced about connecting with someone in Dhaka, or someone in Dhaka connecting with someone in Camilla, and learning together and talking together and sharing their learning and getting to know each other, and in many cases becoming friends online. Some kids didn't take to it as well as others, and that came out in their work. But I think, you know, that's par for the course. You know, what was fascinating for me was watching the discussion tabs, reading the discussion tabs, mm-hmm. and it was fascinating to watch the comments that Vicky, you were making, and that Julie was making, mm-hmm. because the lines really blurred about whose class, who was in whose class.
Yes.
It was almost as though you had really adopted Julie's students as part of your class, and she had done the same with the students in your class. So something that's really, really difficult for us to do, which is team teaching, when we live in the same building, you managed to do with someone who's half a world away, you know, and 12 hours away. That was one of the things that was really striking for me, as well as the connections the kids made.
Yeah.
Along the same lines.
Well, it was interesting because Julie said that her students really took to the comments that I made, and that really motivated them. And I know that my students really enjoyed the comments that Julie made. And so it was just really, and we actually really did connect with her students. In fact, one of her students had an accident right at the end of the project. And all of my students were upset about it and concerned about him. And it was just, it's just really interesting what happened. Terry, do you want to introduce yourself now?
Yes, thanks. I'm Terry Friedman. I'm an educational technology consultant based in England. And I very much enjoyed taking part in this project because, I think I would echo much of what Darren has said. And the interesting thing is, I've always enjoyed team teaching, and I've always enjoyed team teaching in what I would call a casual sort of way. For example, whenever in the past I've run my own department in educational technology, and I've always encouraged a culture in which the other teachers in the department could feel that they could come into my lessons and make comments, and vice versa. And we used to have some great fun, excuse me, with students, as sometimes we'd deliberately walk into the other person's lesson and say, well, I wouldn't agree with that, or that's a lot of rubbish. And although this project wasn't quite like that, I mean, it was really interesting seeing the comments and everything, and it was as if it was taking part in the same room. Now, the interesting thing was, as I've told you, I did this presentation with Miles Berry a few days ago at the BET Show, what is called the BET Show, which has become a really big international event. And I think our presentation was either the only one, or perhaps only one or two, that was on social technologies in the classroom. And it was completely booked out in advance. And we had the biggest room. So,
wow.
So there were 250 tickets sold, and we allowed about 50 people in. And I even received a few emails from people saying they were sorry they couldn't get to it. And the interesting thing about that was that Miles and I did a sort of double act, in which Miles explained all the underpinning theory and the pedagogy and explained what the tools were. And I gave examples, you see, mm-hmm. gave examples of classroom use. And the example of the wiki I gave was the Flat Classrooms project, you see. Mm-hmm. Now, what I did was I showed them a screenshot of the Flat Classrooms website, and I pointed out the discussion tab and everything like that. And, you know, when you've got an audience, you could see by the looks on their faces, they were absolutely enthralled with this. You know, there was just this kind of look of wonderment. Now, we're talking about people who were, I mean, this was on when was it? It was late Thursday afternoon. I think it was the penultimate session of the Thursday afternoon, and everyone is absolutely tired. And they were sitting there wide-eyed. And then I played them the first part of Kennell and Casey's video, which they found absolutely, really enjoyable. I had to tell them in advance what Kennell was saying because she does speak a little bit quickly. Mm-hmm. And but they really loved it. And someone came up to me afterwards and said, I really now understand what a wiki is all about, what this flat classroom, you know, what all of this is all about. And it just seemed to get them, you know. So I'm hoping that there'll be quite a few people who will go off and want to do something similar themselves. So in that sense, in terms of inspiring people, I think the whole project has been fantastic. And I think what we need to do now, and I say we in the hope that I haven't upset people so much with my comments that I'm included in the next round of all this.
Oh, yeah.
I think what we need to do now is somehow get down to the basics so that you could kind of almost package it up. So that you can say to people, well, if you want to run a similar project, these are the things you need to do.
Right.
And I think also, how can we actually assess it efficiently? Because I don't think at the moment the model is scalable, because it was really hard. It was really a lot of work to do with doing all the judging with just two classes. And if there were 100, which
right.
is what someone mentioned before, I don't think it's possible given the present model. And I think that would put people off, to be honest.
Yes.
But I think in the UK, for example, at the moment, assessment for learning is really going to take off because, I mean, I've been pushing it for a while, but something happened on Wednesday, which I think will really start to push it. And that is the fact that the education minister announced that the test that students were going to be taking at the end of when they reach the age of 14 is now no longer to be compulsory, and the emphasis is going to be on formative assessment rather than summative assessment. And I actually think that this could be a great tool, part of a great set of tools for encouraging assessment for learning. Sorry to have rambled on a bit.
I think that you've really hit the nail on the head, as we say down here in South Georgia, because this Julie and I, when we started, once we saw pretty early on the synergy that was building between our classes, as we mentioned the project, the reason we wanted to have judges, because we were really like, in this new Web2 environment, it is an environment where professionals who find things that work should share, so that it doesn't take so long to duplicate or to move to another area. And we thought that by involving some of who we consider the top leaders in this field that were geographically dispersed, we could show literally how people around the world can not only judge but work. And you're exactly right. Our concern is, once we saw how intensive it was for the judges, was that it does have to be scalable. And I know that we've created a page on our wiki to try to talk about how can we make it scalable. And it may be the idea you have, Terry, of letting the peer assessment be the first phase and then produce something, that would go on from there. Now, Darren, how about you interject some about where you think this sort of thing should go, where you'd like to see it going, kind of like Terry has done.
Sure. I have to agree with Terry's comments about the current scalability of the project. I found it to be a tremendous amount of work. And I thought, when we were all done, like the rubric that we were given, I found that was a difficult rubric to work with. I would have been more comfortable with kind of, Vicky, I don't know if you've seen the rubrics that I posted on my blog, but it's what I try to do is just in text describe levels of achievement and cut it up into four levels. And then something along that would have been easier. But even if we had done that, there were so many categories, I still don't think it's really scalable. I think it should probably be something along the lines of, well, first, in terms of assessment, I think the rubric should be given to the students. And part of their final project is they have a deadline maybe for submitting their work, and given one extra day where they then have to submit the rubric where they assess their own work. I think that's probably a really important piece.
I did do that with my rubric.
Oh, good.
But my rubric is different than – the judging rubric is actually much more simple than the final assessment rubric that Julie
Don't
and I had. Believe it or not, if you look on the wiki, you can see under rubrics the specifics. And we didn't want y'all to get into the detail of did they do this and did they do that. I'm just trying to figure out if how it can be simplified, if there's a methodology of ranking or.
Well, I think my impression was we had to, as the judge, maybe it's too much for the judges to comment. Like, there were 10 different assignments that we looked at.
Right.
So maybe it's too much to have each judge comment on all 10.
Right.
What might be easier is for each judge to scan through the presentations and quickly pick out perhaps their top three. And then perhaps give, on their top three, so this is my number 1, 2, 3, and then give some, and I think that would probably would be most valuable to the students is the kind of anecdotal feedback that we were giving on the judging pages.
Right.
May I make a few comments?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. Well, I think, I'm broadly in agreement with Darren. I think one of the problems, let me just say what I think the problems were. First of all, when you have really wide marking zones, or I don't know what else to call them, like, for example, 10 marks for spelling or 30 marks for something else. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of, to my mind, you either gave 30 marks or no marks, and I couldn't So I ended up doing it on a very subjective criteria, which were probably different from the criteria everyone else used. And in a sense, it would have been better to have had, you know, just two or three or four, as Darren suggests, criteria. I mean, like for the spelling, for example, it's either satisfactory or unsatisfactory. And then all you need to do is just say, well, what would make, how many mistakes are you allowed to have before it becomes unsatisfactory? And if there are more,
yeah, I think,
than
I think
that
even
number,
that, I don't think I would put a number on that. I would just, you know, words
or...
like, you know, there was a significant number of spelling errors, there were few errors or few to none. Mm. You know, just because once you get into the business of trying to pin it down by numbers, that's when the assessment becomes really finely grained. And that's
yes.
the part that becomes difficult. Well, I mean, like you, Terry, I found it very subjective to generate a mark out of 30. What I generally did was kind of figure out a mark out of 10 and multiply by 3. And
yes.
even that was I was kind of guessing.
Well,
I didn't feel I was really assessing the kids fairly.
No,
I hope my judgments don't play a role in their marks.
No, we assessed, you know, without y'all.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you see, that for me, that actually added to the time taken because mm-hmm. it was so subjective. I ended up on each one thinking, well, maybe I better just look at it another time, one more time, rather than judge them on this subjective criteria, you know, so it took a lot mm-hmm. longer. But the other thing is I introduced other criteria. For example, one of the criteria I used, I started to realize I was introducing, was would I use this in a presentation to other professionals? And that's because I was thinking about two presentations I was due to give, one of which was the social technologies in the classroom one with Myers Berry, and the other one was what does good educational technology look like? And with some of these, I was thinking, oh, I'd use this as a resource, or I'd recommend that as a resource, or I must put that in the next coming of age. And there wasn't a box for that. And I felt afterwards, well, perhaps there should have been, because if this is all about the real world and the flat world and all of that kind of thing, there should have been some kind of criteria about how do people outside, I mean, not just other educationalists, but how do people outside this whole project, how would they use it? I mean, there were some of those resources, and there was one which was in effect just a collection of resources, and there wasn't much value added. But I actually found it so useful, I bookmarked it because I can't remember which one it was now. But I would recommend that to someone as a starting point, because it seems to me that the students have done the work that otherwise I would have had to have done, which is quite good. So I think that might be a criteria next time. You know, would you use it in your professional work? Would you recommend it to other teachers?
I am taking notes prolifically, even though I can listen back on this. Because really, as I'm listening to you, what Julie and I were looking for is, you know, number one, a winner, a motivation. Because, you know, the thing about it is students tend to competition a lot of times will take your top and make them better, and we really, really saw that. But also the anecdotal, like you said, Darren, is so mm-hmm. important. And you know, I'm wondering if it would be more like you said, you know, scan it. Of course, the only difficulty comes if, you know, y'all had a different top five, and we eventually saw a pattern emerge mm-hmm. with the winner. But, you know, what do you do when you know, everybody has a different opinion, which,
well, I suspect, like, from looking at the kids' work, you quit pretty quickly nail down the few that are really hands-down exceptional work that stand out from the rest of their peers. In terms of part of the competitive aspect, I mean, if... it's a time to even provide anecdotal feedback on every presentation.
Right.
So when I say something like each judge chooses three that they want to provide anecdotal feedback on and chooses their number one, two, three. So there's a bit of a competition to see if you even make it to get the anecdotal feedback from the outside judge. Because I was just thinking, if I was a kid, I would love to hear how someone outside my classroom thought.
Yes.
About the, you know, what they and I think there's a bit of a reward just in getting that comments. So in that sense, I guess all the kids are winners because they all get that.
Yes.
And in terms of there being more than one winner. Well, I suppose it's possible, but it's probably not very likely. And if it does happen, it's probably going to be because two groups or two students are so close together in the work they've done, which is how I felt it came down to with the videos, that the differences were not marked enough for me to be able to say, no, this one's better than that one. And I suspect that would likely come out as an emerging pattern, no matter who the judges were.
Right. Yes.
The other comment I would make about the judges is there needs to be a mechanism by which the judges can communicate, because we did talk about it and we tried a couple little things and we never really got together, Julie, Jeff, Terry, and myself, to really talk about, well, you know, did you see this project? This is really good. And to have a bit of a conversation. What might have been interesting would have been perhaps if we had done a podcast.
Uh-huh.
And find a time that's convenient for all of us to come together, and maybe there's a preset list of questions, and so that would form part of the assessment, that recording, that students could have. And then, I'm just thinking out loud now.
I like that idea. I wonder if it would be good to have, you know, sort of a lead judge, or to have everyone, you know, for example, when you start, you could say, okay, these are our four judges we have, or say we had 15 judges, and this is the number of projects. Darren, you look at 1 through 3, and Terry, you look at 4 through 6. We're going to have a podcast and just sort of give our preliminary feedback to determine where we go from here. You know, is that what you're saying?
Well, that's what they do. That's what ISTE does in order to decide which proposals are going to be accepted for presentation at the NET conference. Because otherwise, it would be impossible for just a small group of people to look at all of them. And what they do is they allocate a certain number to each person, well, each pair of people, basically, and it gets whittled down like that. And I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, like if we each picked our top three and then came together to have a conversation about it. And
yeah,
if we record that conversation,
yeah. The tough
if
thing
we record
is
that, it's less onerous in terms of generating documents and stuff like that.
Yeah, the tough thing is to pick the top three if you had, you know, if you had a lot more projects, then you would have to look at all of them, which would
expand the judging pool. Like,
yeah.
For example, I can't see a single pair of classes coming up with a great many more projects than you did, like 10 projects. You know, if each class puts 2 or 3 students on the project, then that's probably about the size of most, that'd cover most classes, 20 to 30 kids.
Right. Well, you know, I'd kind of like to see, you know, three or four or five classes on one wiki and split it up by, a discipline, healthcare, and, you know, just we've kind of been talking along those lines to where do we take it. I tell you, and I know we need to finish up, I'd like each of you to talk about your top video, but I'll tell you, in 2.5 weeks of learning, I really felt like I saw a lifetime of learning out of the students. When they finished, they described themselves with terms like, you know, professional and collaborator, and they talk about the importance of being professional and how to deal with, you know, different countries and how to interact, and they learn some cultural things that I think that college students don't know, and it's just been I really truly feel that my students are transformed. They are honestly different students. It's like they grew up. I don't really know how to explain it, but
you should do a podcast. Have them reflect on their flat classroom experiences.
I actually have recorded a video and I'm in the process of turning it into a video. I'm going to upload it on Google Video, and you'll be impressed. And as you said, Jeff just Skyped me. Darren, it hasn't been perfect, and there's the full range of performance there, as you would expect, because it's a real classroom. But even my lower performing students still learned a lot, and if I'm looking at what they're learning, I'm extremely pleased with what they learned. Now,
shall I tell you something I found a little bit disappointing? I'm not sure what could have been done about it, but we've had no interaction with the students, and I would have loved to have had conversations with them about how they feel we're judging it, and
what they were getting out of it and stuff like that.
Yeah, there might have been nice to have, and I suppose it's something we still could do, but have an opportunity for the judges and students together in a podcast.
Yes.
And maybe they could question us, or we could question them. Or...
Yeah, I think that would be really good.
Yeah, and we could set it up. I tell you, the tough thing for Julie and I has been our kids are literally not in the class at the same time.
Yeah.
So a lot of the communication has been via chat with some. I mean, Casey and Cannell, actually, they were so excited about the project. They did Skype and talk quite a bit. But, you know, we're very rural Georgia, and so we have a lot of 56K connections. So they really did not get to talk a lot. And Julie and I, and you could hear how difficult the connection was. Mm-hmm. Julie and I didn't literally talk. A lot of it we did was chat and discussions and email, just because it is a asynchronous type project. And, you know, it's just been kind of interesting how, you know, asynchronous and synchronous are two totally different things. Doing a project like this with a class in South America is entirely different than doing one in, you know, all the way around the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, which makes it difficult for the podcast and things, but it can be done. And I would love to have either of you talk to my students sometime that we could record and actually put you up on the board. I would love that.
Cool.
And if I'm actually going to let them listen to this, so okay. You will be in my classroom. But anyway, how about each of you announce your winning videos?
Okay.
Terry, do you want to go first?
Yeah, you use the plural. Have I got to do more than one?
No. Well, Darren has two videos, so okay. Go ahead.
Well, it was quite tough, but I think the winning video for me was Cannell and Casey's introductory video, and the reason being was the sheer enthusiasm and pleasure that it exuded, and. You know, at the end of the day, I think that's what a lot of this stuff is all about. It's about having fun, and it's about the joy of connecting with other people, and that really came through on that video. And I also thought it indicated what real learning was all about, because the fact that they didn't actually need to do it, but they wanted to do it, I thought was absolutely fantastic. I mean, that in itself is testimony to the to how good this project was. So I'm not saying it was technically the best, but in overall terms and in terms of inspiring others and that sort of thing, and making you want to actually go ahead and look at their project, which is what the purpose of it was,
yes.
I think it was really good. And for me, the best.
Exciting. That was really exciting to see that happen. That was actually the final one ended up being about the fourth or fifth version of that video. They kept cutting and recutting and re-adding, and it was just really fascinating to see that. Okay, Darren?
Okay, well, I really couldn't pin it down to one. There were two that really, really impressed me, and there were some similarities in them. The way that they had the voiceover had visual images that went with it, and the images were changing at a really quick pace, and it really just kind of held your interest as you're trying to follow along with the voiceover. I was also impressed by voiceover that added information that wasn't already in the wiki in text. So my two choices were Andrew's video from
Mobile and Ubiquitous.
Mobile and Ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And I thought that he had great pacing. The animation was wonderful. I was impressed with the way he was cutting back and forth with the interview with Mr. Stargell and his voiceover.
Yes.
And the altered ending was probably my favorite. He might start
the zebra dance.
The zebra dance was great. I loved, you know, I mean, everyone's heard about the Numa Numa dance. I think Andrew's going to start a new viral video with the zebra dance. That was fantastic.
We had lots of debates about the zebra dance on there. He didn't want it to hurt his chances. So he cut two copies. Great, great.
And my second choice, which is really on a par with Andrew, is was Casey's video from the virtual communication wiki.
Yes.
And again, it was that very quick-paced changing of images, voiceover, the way that she used the effects, video effects, really complemented the message and didn't obscure it. The way she blended all different kinds of modes of communication in her video, and the humor. I guess I really like when there's a little bit of humor in it.
You've been listening to Vicky Skyping with Darren and Terry, two of our Flat Classroom judges. Coming up now is a conversation I had with Jeff Utecht, another of the judges for the project. Jeff is a technology resource facilitator at the Shanghai American School, and he has in China, of course. He has a blog called The Thinking Stick, which is gaining in popularity. And I started the Skype conversation with Jeff asking him about his general impressions of the project and some comments about his role as a judge.
Yeah, overall, the project was simply amazing. The communication between the two kids was incredible. It was fun to read the discussion threads that happened behind the scenes, the stuff that wasn't actually published on the front side of the wiki, and see some of the conversations that went on. The one that Camille and Casey did, that the winning, the best overall wiki project that won, some of the conversations that they had in the discussion you learn as much about what happens and, you know, how something like this can actually happen from those discussions that take place, sometimes more than you do with actually reading what's being published on the front end. So I found that to be fascinating, just the way that the kids, sometimes I think we so underestimate students sometimes, and it was great to see some of the groups really come forward and put their best foot forward and produce some amazing wiki pages.
Yeah, I know. We do tend to underestimate them. I agree with you. We tend to think we tend to put them in sort of little boxes and think, well, you can do this and you can do that. But given a chance, you know, that students can really fly. They can really show us up to an extent. Darren actually made the point when he was discussing with Vicky yesterday that he was just fascinated with what was happening on the discussion tabs as well, and the fact that Vicky and I were hopping in there and giving little comments every day or so, a couple of days, and that was sort of like the project undercover, wasn't it? The actual discussion. And I think it's important to feature this as well in any sort of reflective material that we're doing, to show that it wasn't just what was happening on the main wiki page, but we could actually show through the wiki format what was actually happening in terms of the collaboration.
Exactly. And I mean, Darren, I think, brought up, that one of the things I listened to that podcast earlier today, and one of the things he brought up was how blurred the lines became between you and Vicky, and you weren't just talking with your students, and Vicky wasn't just talking with her students. It was a project, and there were two teachers and a bunch of kids, and it just everybody went at it, and it was cool to see those lines blur, and everybody being able to give their two cents wherever they felt it was needed.
Mm. Yeah, it's It's interesting also, this sort of international focus that this project has had. I mean, my students are quite, I'm trying to think of the right word, I think bemused is a good word. They're sort of going, oh yeah, and we did some reflective, I did a little bit of video work in the class today, some sort of, well, what do you think now, it's all over sort of thing. And a couple of them were quite keen to tell me that, well, this has put Bangladesh on the map. This has actually showed people where Bangladesh is, and we're not India sort of thing. So I think this is...
Yeah, exactly.
And it's important, it's important from their point of view that this is sort of, well, we're over here, we are on the other side of the world, but, here we are, this is us, and we're...
Yeah.
And it's really good to get their thoughts on this. Jeff, as a judge, what were the challenges for you as a judge in this whole process?
I think the challenges, some of the things that Darren and Terry talked about earlier in their podcast, I think they're... You and Vicky left it so open for us. And, this being the first time that any of us had ever been involved in a project like this, that there wasn't really a set way to go about it. And I think that as judges, I think that took us a while to get going. You know, I mean, we were all, I don't know, nobody wanted to take the lead and say, this is the way things are going to be done. And you and Vicky very much left it up to us on how we felt the best way to handle it. And I think it took it a while for there just to kind of become a routine of way things that were going to be done. I think that slowed us down a little bit as judges.
Mm. I know Darren tried to implement YakPak at one stage. And I mean, from Bangladesh here, YakPak is so slow. I don't know whether anyone actually... I ended up not going back to it. Did you ever try that?
Yeah, I tried to record something one time, and that, you know, I had the same problem. It didn't work very well. And I think, you know, that's one of those things that starts to come into play when we start doing these things and we start talking about, you know, a flat world. And somebody else wrote a paper, and it was called The World's Not Flat, but it was like The World is Spiky. And I think that's a better definition of the way the world is, because, you know, when there's places like North America and Europe where broadband internet access and the freedom of information is just there. And there's places like Bangladesh where, you know, and China where we still struggle. We still struggle with broadband outside of China. If it's a Chinese site, I have absolutely no problem getting to it. And I can probably get my two megabyte line that's coming into my apartment. I can actually probably get 2 megabytes out of it. But I try to access anything from the States, and there's no way. And then you try to add something like YakPak, or even like, you know, like you said tonight, we hooked up with Skype, and you just don't know. You don't know what that connection is going to be at that time. And so I think that's a better definition for it, is that, you know, the world is, it's spiky. There's places where there's a much better connection than there are others. And I think when we're starting to do projects like this that are, you know, worldly projects, you have to take into account the tools that you're going to use, because the connection speed that you have is going to affect it.
Yes, you have to find tools that are levelers, don't you? And but I mean, even Vicky in Georgia, as she said, it's a rural community. I mean, not everywhere in America is high density city, and most of her students have actually dial-up access to the internet. So, you know, we thought at one stage that if they were at home at night and my students were in class during the day, they could perhaps Skype, but it just didn't work because her students couldn't do that. I mean, it's spiky, but it's spiky all over. I agree. It's not just the developing countries, but it is pockets of Western countries as well that still haven't, got the internet developed or the connectivity developed to an extent where we can rely on it. And so it is a matter of being flexible, isn't it? This type of project, you had to be on your toes all the time to sort of think, well, that's not working, so we'll try something else now.
Mm. Yeah, and exactly, and I mean, and it was things like looking back at the project. You know, I didn't know that you guys were going to be using Google Videos, and Google Videos is not. I can't view Google Videos in China. And so I had to defer to everybody else for the Google Videos on, you know, what videos were going to come out on top, because I put out a Google Video and all I get is a black screen that says this content is not available in your country.
Mm. Now tell me, Jeff, what about YouTube? Do you get YouTube as well, or is that blocked?
Nope, YouTube works perfectly fine. We use YouTube all the time.
Oh, okay. Because I put on the awards page today that you couldn't get YouTube as well. So I probably need to change that. I think a couple of the videos that were put up there were in YouTube. I think Canel's video is in YouTube. But yeah, you're right. 90% of them were in Google, which, you know, in retrospect, we should have worked a way around that so that somehow we could get the videos to you rushed. But
Well, it's just, and I think, I mean, you're gonna run into those issues, you know, until things are done like this, and you just realize where things are. I know I have a friend who's in United Arab Emirates, and Skype is blocked there, and so we have to either chat when we decide to chat. It either has to be through Google Talk or MSN or, you know, some other system, because that country has decided to block Skype. And you know, again, it's, you know, as more and more of these projects come, these kind of things work out. But when you're doing something like this for the first time, you don't know what your complications are going to be, or what you're going to run into until you've actually done it. And so, you know, looking back now, would it have been just as easy for you to upload everything on YouTube? Probably, but you know, that's just not where you were. Mm,
that's right. Jeff, what sort of ideas do you think do you have for this project for the future? I mean, Well, yeah, we're sort of tossing a few things around at the moment in terms of pulling it together, in terms of refining the rubrics that we've used and looking at, I mean, Terry mentioned on the conversation, looking at more of a saleable or packageable sort of item. And, you know, people have done this with other sort of global projects. I mean, I've put up on the wiki, we have a bit of a wiki page going where we're discussing future judging things to do with systems and methodology. And I've actually put up about the International School Cyber Fair, which has been going now for over 10 years. And they have really refined their whole system in terms of how they actually present the project mm-hmm. and how they... what the classrooms do and how it's reviewed, it's peer review and it's judge review, and there's a whole timeline that actually goes for quite a few months. I mean, that's a big project. But in terms of ours, I mean, the fact that it's actually worked, the fact that we have involved people from all around the world and we've all learnt from it, teachers as well as students, I mean, there's probably something now that we can move on to. So what ideas do you have?
Yeah. Well, I think I have, you know, being a judge with this project, I think I have a lot of the same, coming from a lot of the same places that Terry and Darren were coming from earlier today. And it comes down to, I think, you know, you to really have a scoring guide that is very rooted in something that you could really look at and quickly be able to grade. You know, one of the things I know Terry brought up, and I think it was a great example, was the spelling rubric. I think it was 10 points for spelling. Is that right? 10 or 15 points
yeah,
for spelling.
Yeah, something like that.
What is 15 points for spelling? You know, where if you'd have something where it was just like, you know, satisfactory or unsatisfactory, you know, and you can make a judgment call, you know, what is satisfactory spelling? What is unsatisfactory spelling? And that's the grade for spelling grade. Because how do you figure, you know, what's 10 out of 15 in spelling? You know, is that a percentage of words that are spelled wrong? And I mean, that's an easy example to use. I think it's a good example. At the same time, because it just, you know, how. I think that's the big part of it is, you know, can you come up with a scoring project or a scoring rubric that's very precise, and so that, you know, when you do have, like you and Nikki were saying, you know, this needs to be able to work for 5 classes, 20 or 100 classes, you know, can you have a rubric in place, a very concrete scoring guide that judges can come in, they can grab it, they know exactly what it means that they're looking for, they can give it a quick glance, and they can start, you know, going through projects, however many they have to grade. So I think that's the big one. And that, you know, and that's just time. You know, teachers know, I mean, your first rubric is never your best, and every time you do a project, you refine it, and it becomes a little better, and it becomes a little better, and I think the same thing will happen. And like you mentioned, you know, with the International Cyber Fair, you know, they've been doing it for 10 years. They've got a system down that works.
That's right, yeah. So. Yeah, no, I agree. It's and Darren was on the right track as well, and I need to look back at his work that he's put on his blog recently, where he's been developing a rubric for Flickr, I think, hasn't he, from memory, where you it's more descriptive based, you know, has very few spelling mistakes, has many spelling mistakes, or most words are spelled incorrectly or something like that. So you have this has few spelling mistakes, so that's a 1, or, you know, the medium one is a 2, or the something like that, or the reverse figuration. But no, I agree that the type of rubric that we did sort of throw up there doesn't meet the needs of the project. And in fact, you know, I've just spent hours in the last few days doing my final assessment for my students, and of course, you know, it just doesn't quite, when you start to equate the excitement of the project and then the sort of, okay, now I've got to assess it as a teacher, the two things don't go hand in hand, because the assessment is not very exciting, actually. It's sort of like, oh, well, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to give this project now, because I could see the sweat and tears coming out of this poor kid, you know, when they were producing this page. And I mean, even though the page may not look that good, it may not be a high-flying student, but the effort that went into it... you know, I have to sort of come up with some sort of assessment for that, and we are as teachers tied into semester reports and being able to, you know, talk about what the students have achieved. I mean, what have they learnt? And our reporting system at our school only really meets that halfway. To be honest, it's only sort of coming towards reflecting what has actually happened in this room. And this opens a whole can of worms, really.
Well, I found it interesting that, you know, here you and Vicky were both, your kids were producing one, your students were producing one wiki page, yet you had two separate scoring guides for your two different classrooms.
Mm, yes. Well, that's another issue as well. I mean,
I found that interesting. Yeah, I found that very interesting. You know, it's like, okay, well, this class is trying to meet this rubric, and this class is trying to meet this rubric, but the two classes together have to produce a page.
Mm, yes. I know. Well, it just shows perhaps the haste with which we went into this project.
You know, I think it comes down to it. as we move into these type of projects. Well, I mean, it's when you do something like this for the first time, you're going to run into those things, and I can totally see it being one of those things where here's a brand new project using Web 2.0 tools where we're doing things differently, yet when it comes time to assess it, we're assessing it in a 1.0 school world. Mm.
Yes.
The assessment piece, when you do something completely different like this, you've got to change the way everything happens. And if you don't, you find out after the fact. Like, I mean, it's easy now. I mean, hindsight, we're all looking back now. And I'm so glad that you and Vicky are taking the time to actually do this and to produce something and say, where do we go from here? Because it's these kinds of things that, that we need to tell people. Like, if you're going to do projects like this, it doesn't work the same way. You know, we've moved out of the old scarcely created rubric. It needs to be different.
Mm, that's right. Terry made an interesting comment. A couple of things, actually, about judges interacting with the students was one of his comments. How do you feel about that? Do you feel as though, as a judge, you wanted to be more fully involved? I mean, mm-hmm. We're looking at a time factor here, of course, and a time zone factor. Today and yesterday, I'm looking at the awards and mm-hmm. I've been handing out my rubrics to the kids, and they're going, "Oh, but why did it? They're actually asking for some feedback now from the judges. Well, okay, so this one got first. Why did they think this one got first? Why did they say that, etc.? Which is perfectly understandable. Yeah. Wants more feedback from these people who I've got your picture up on my notice board, saying, well, this is, this one's from China, this one's from England, who are these people?
Yeah.
Why are they looking at our work? What are they saying about our work? So maybe some sort of system needs to be built in where not only is there peer review, but there's sort of interaction with the judges or more of an understanding. And that probably comes from having a more solid sort of assessment and a more understandable sort of rubric system underneath that, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, I loved that comment that Terry made, and I think that'd be a great idea. I'd love to be able to go in, quickly, use a rubric with very simplified rubric to know exactly what, what it is you're looking for. Go in and quickly pick like we did in this project. You there?
Hello, I'm back. Yeah. I think something dropped off then.
Hi.
I think our line...
Oh, there we go. There's the perfect example.
Yes, that's right. Dropped off the end of the flat world. There you go.
You still there?
I'm still here, yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, so anyway, I don't know where it cut off what I was saying, but if there was a way to sit down with the students and be looking at their wiki page and, basically almost like an interview, what are you trying to cover here? What are you talking about here? To be able to sit down and get a kid's point of view. And at the same time for the students, again, A, they have to back up, what they've written, and they have to defend, their point of view and where they're coming from. And at the same time, they would get the feel of, what is the judge looking for? What are the things that judge is homing in on? I think that'd be awesome.
It's the students are very exposed, and I think it's so good for them because they have to justify what they're doing. And some of the... you know, there were all different levels, of course, of students in the project. And you know, the typical sort of school 1.0, of course, is you write it, the teacher reads it, and you get a mark and you take it home, and that's it. But this is nowhere like this. I mean, this project is right out there. The students have to be able to justify everything they're doing and to virtually speak to it. And this is a bit of a shock for some of them. I mean, some of them just could not cope with this method of learning as much as perhaps some teachers wouldn't cope with it.
No, I'm sure.
So, but I think it's so good for them. I mean, this need to be original.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how many people have viewed the page?
Now, Vicky wrote something. We're writing some stuff together, some articles, and I've just read something this evening. Over 30,000 hits, I think, we've had on that little map thing. What's that called? Over 30,000 hits we've had since it was, you know, since it was started. Wow. Given that that's probably a few people going back again, that's still quite a lot of people looking at the page. And if you look at the little dots, I mean, it is right around the world, of course, people looking at it. So it's quite mind-boggling, the fact that it's right out there, and that we're actually, you know, sitting here now tonight analysing these students and what they've actually done in the whole process. So it's just quite unusual, because even in I think this is quite different to anything that has gone on before. I mean, Cyberfair is one thing, the iEARN learning circles. I don't know, are you familiar with iEARN? Hello?
Uh-uh.
No, you're not? No. International Education and
Resource. I'm not familiar.
Right, it stands for International Education and Resource Network, and they do, one thing they do is learning circles, which you group, say, about half a dozen classrooms from around the world into this learning circle. But how the tools that you use for collaboration, when I used to do them, it was mainly email, and perhaps an individual classroom would create their own website. But this sort of online interaction, the way we've been doing, I haven't exactly seen anything like it before, which is why, you know, we are sort of pioneering the way to an extent. Now, whether, you know, anyone else actually ever wants to do this, or whether it works for other curriculum areas or whatever, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But, you know, the whole medium of the wiki is so flexible that, you know, it has actually worked. So,
yeah, no, it was a fascinating project. I'm so glad I got to be a part of it. Thank you.
And to finish up this podcast, we're going to hear from Jo McClay from Melbourne, Australia, with her thoughts and comments about the Flat Classroom project.
Hello, my name is Jo McClay, and I've been one of the judges in the Flat Classroom project. I've really enjoyed doing that. I teach in a girls' school in Melbourne, Australia. I teach mostly English, language arts and literature. I've been teaching since 1978, with time off for having children. I've got five of them, aged between 23 and 15. In 2007, our school starts the International Baccalaureate program for years 7 to 10. I guess this might be interesting for the students from the International School DACA, who are also working with the IBO, I understand. I've been most impressed with the quality of the learning that I saw taking place while you were putting this project together. I love so much about it. The topics, the fact that you were living what you were learning about, and the fact that your work collectively has produced a resource that's able to be used by others. I was in the process of buying a new computer, and I look back at some of the work done by Group 3 on workflow software to help me research prior to choosing a new computer. I learnt so much just by being on the judging panel about international collaboration, including crossing the time zones and things like that. So I'm sure you must have learnt heaps more. The overall work you have done is an example for other schools as well. Overall, I've given the award of Best Group to Casey and Cannell for their work on virtual communications. Congratulations to you too, and to your teachers as well. Some of the things that I thought about the work that Casey and Cannell did was that what I liked about it was their passion and their interest came through in the work that they did. And there was an incredible amount of collaboration seen from the discussion page, which is one of the things that wikis are good for, to be able to see how things are changing. I really loved the use of the interview of Cannell's father by Casey for her section. And I really liked the way Casey saw the implications of the project. She could tell, I think, from doing it what the benefit of that was going to be. I really liked the videos that you've put up, and the personal connection that the students made to this topic made this topic really engaging for me. So I really, really liked that one, and I've really enjoyed being part of the Flat Classroom project. I think it's the beginning of something that will be done by others and expanded and extended by others. So thank you for allowing me to be part of it.
You've been listening to Discussion and Reflection about the Flat Classroom Project 2006 with Vicky Davis, Jeff Utecht, Darren Corapatwa, Terry Friedman and Joe McClay. And I'm Julie Lindsay. For more information about the Flat Classroom Project, please go to flatclassroomproject.wikispaces.com. Thanks for listening to this podcast.